This week marked the 40th anniversary of the People Power Revolution in the Philippines, an outbreak of mass non-violent protest that ended the dictatorship of Ferdinand Marcos, who ruled the country for 21 years, many of those under martial law. On the 25th of February 1986, Ferdinand Marcos fled to Hawaii, assisted by the US, as protesters broke into the presidential palace and saw firsthand the incredible opulence of the president and his notorious shoe-loving wife, Imelda. 40 years after the People Power Revolution, the democratically elected president of the Philippines is Ferdinand Marcos, son of the dictator and known as Bongbong. So how has the revolution been remembered in 2026? And what is the state of Philippines democracy today? Cleo Kalimbahin is a professor of political science at De La Salle University in Manila and currently a research fellow at the ANU. She recently published the essay Participatory Democracy in a Time of Democratic Backsliding, Populism and Polarization. Cleo, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
As well as being called the People Power Revolution, the revolution is also known as the EDSA Revolution. So could you tell us what EDSA refers to and what happened there 40 years ago?
Yes, so EDSA stands for the Epifanio de los Santos Avenue. It's a major thoroughfare in metropolitan Manila that connects key cities across. So what happened 40 years ago was a peaceful uprising against two decades of authoritarian rule. There was just this spontaneous convergence of people in support of anti-dictatorship efforts and individuals.
And it was, as I understand it, in response to President Marcos claiming that he'd won an election against Corazon Aquino, and ultimately the people didn't accept that and he was forced from power.
That's right. There were allegations of electoral fraud during that elections. Some of the tabulators walked out because of some discrepancies that they saw. And so at one point, there was the proclamation of Corazon Aquino in one location in Manila, and Ferdinand Marcos proclaimed himself winner as well.
What was it that made it possible for this mass outpouring of protest? Who were the key players in terms of making those protests convert into a change of government?
The opposition had a hard time during the dictatorship, because the any critic of the Marcos regime would be either imprisoned or would disappear. So it took time to have a strong opposition against Marcos. But what some of the critical junctures include the assassination of Benigno Aquino, assassination as he returned from exile in the U.S., and then, as you mentioned, the sudden snap election that Ferdinand Marcos Sr. Called when he was being interviewed by David Brinkley. And just very confident that he would win an election when there was question about is the Philippines a democracy or not under his rule. Now, some of the key players are Cardinal Sin. He is the Archbishop of the Diocese of Manila, and also vocal against the dictatorship. And he went on radio to say, please support some of the soldiers who are defecting against Marcos Sr.
And that was another critical element of the power dynamics, wasn't it? That some members of the military decided to no longer support Marcos. Who were the leaders within the military who made those calls?
So I think these members of the military actually were not necessarily pro-democracy factions, but they were getting more and more disillusioned with the Marcos regime, but they also had their own agenda. So they were led by the Minister of Defense at the time, Juan Ponce Enrile, who was a close Marcos associate, but then sort of realized that he was not in the calculus of succession with Ferdinand Marcos Sr. And so he had his own supporters in the military, and they essentially wanted to defect. But the Marcos camp actually found out about it, and so they called for help. because they knew that they would be neutralized because Marcos' forces are definitely more than them. And so this is when they ask for help from Cardinal Sin. But, you know, in this whole complicated politics of the Philippines, that faction within the military that initiated this would also be the same faction that would launch coup d'etats against Corazon Aquino later on.
Cleo, it strikes me that the People Power Revolution is one of those momentous times where sort of everyone remembers where they were when it happened. What are your memories of that time?
Right. So 1986, I was actually living in Jakarta with my parents because my father was posted in Jakarta. And but I have siblings who were left in the Philippines because they were already at university and didn't want to move with us to Jakarta. So half of the family was in the Philippines. And when this was all unfolding, you can imagine how there was news blackout. And it wasn't easy to make the phone call to the Philippines because sometimes the phone lines would be down. And we also had very limited information because at the time, Indonesia was under Suharto and there was media censorship. So there was media censorship in both places. And it was very hard to find out about what was happening, but also to connect with family. And so we really resorted to shortwave radio to find out what was happening in the Philippines.
On Sunday Extra, we're discussing the 40th anniversary of the People Power Revolution in the Philippines with Professor Cleo Kalimbahin. Cleo, I wonder if you could tell us how the 25th of February has been marked in the Philippines over the years, and whether anything's different in 2026.
So typically this date is there's a commemoration, there's an official commemoration and a remembrance, you know, and in schools, people would take note of the fact that this is an anniversary of the People Power Revolution. But since Marcos Jr. came into power, there's been a bit more kind of ambiguity about it. It's almost like the need to mute this People Power Revolution that happened, of course, because they, you know, the outcome of that was the ouster of their family from power. And so for 2026, for instance, again, similar since when Bongbong Marcos became president, there was no official commemoration. But this year, it's the 40th year. So this year, there were two groups that went to demonstrate in front of key monuments in the Philippines. And it's because of the blatant corruption that has been unfolding regarding flood control projects and flood control and mitigation projects.
And I understand that the president declared the 25th of February a special working day. So some sort of recognition of the anniversary, but everyone still had to go to work, no public holiday.
That's right. Again, like I said, there's been such ambiguity ever since he came into power. But I guess now there's a bit of acknowledgement that it happened because there's a need to have an alliance with different political colors and forces leading up to the 2028 elections.
The Philippines is Southeast Asia's oldest democracy, but Cleo, you've described it at various points in your recent essay as a patronage democracy, and a few years ago you described it as a resilient oligarchical state. Could you explain why you've chosen those terms?
Right. So 40 years on since the People Power Revolution happened, since we deposed the dictator, Philippines is still mired in corruption. There's still increasing inequality. It's essentially a state that's captured by political elites concerned more about preserving their power rather than public service. And this is the reason why we have political dynasties who've been in power for 30, 40 years with nothing to show for, because we continue to have inequality, we continue to have poverty in many, many parts of the Philippines.
So what would you say are the enduring achievements, if any, of the People Power Revolution, and how and why did the People Power Revolution fall short?
Well, I think it's important to continue to commemorate people power because it shows the commitment of the Filipino people to the rule of law, to democracy, and clear rejection of dictatorship and authoritarianism. However, over time, we've also elected a violent populist. We've also elected a violent populist, and that violent populist remained having high satisfaction ratings in surveys. It means that there was a segment of the population that approved the war on drugs and the extrajudicial killings at the time of Rodrigo Duterte. So, you know, we have a mixed bag here of yes, you know, uphold the rule of law and embrace democracy and wanting democratic values. But there have been points when we've also seen that the Philippines has elected at that time a candidate that openly said he will have an illiberal rule.
Cleo Kalimbahin, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you too.
And Cleo is Professor of Political Science at De La Salle University, Manila, and currently a research fellow at the ANU. And she recently published the essay, Participatory Democracy in the Time of Democratic Backsliding, Populism and Polarization.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.